If you only had 1 minute to give artists the best music marketing advice you possibly could, what would you tell them?
Well, okay, so I would tell them that a lot of people underestimate what they can do in 10 years, but they overestimate what they can do in a year. So kind of just start the process. Don't be afraid to mess up. Just try everything and everything that you see out there and see what works and just throw stuff at the wall. I think a lot of people get scared to make that first initial jump, but once they get the ball rolling, you'll see a couple wins, and those small wins get you motivated to keep going and just keep pushing through, because you're always going to have the struggle in the beginning, just figuring out things when you don't really know what to do. But as long as you see the goal in front of you and make those baby steps, I think a lot of people can achieve more than they believe they can.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's actually a really good quote. I've heard it before. It's like you underestimate what you can do in 10 years, but overestimate what you can do in one. Did I get it backwards?
Yeah, I think I heard it from, if you know who Alex Hormozi is.
Yeah, of course.
He's like a business entrepreneur. So like, I think I watched one of his interviews. That's what he was talking about. But that really resonated with me, because if you think about it, not even just music, but just in life in general, with any goal setting kind of entrepreneurial activity, yeah, it's always like that initial step that takes the longest to like do. But then after that, it kind of just like snowball effects. So if you can speed up that initial process, then it kind of just, you know, becomes easier.
For sure. And so you're here today for a couple of reasons. But one is that you have 300,000 monthly listeners in Spotify, and a lot of artists would love to have 300,000 monthly listeners in Spotify. So, and on top of that, you've done it in about 2 years, at least from your Spotify releases. I think your first release was in 2021, and it's 2023. So that's like astronomically fast to go from nothing to 300,000 followers. Or sorry, 300,000 monthly listeners. So I think it'd be cool to kind of walk through the journey of, you know, when did you start making, well, not like whole life story from kindergarten or anything, but like when did you start music, taking it seriously and marketing it?
Yeah, I can go through that. So I actually never thought that I was going to get anything in the music industry, make music or anything. I never thought I was musically inclined, to be honest, that much. It was kind of during the pandemic, during the quarantine, I was bored. So I just started making like videos in my car, like making remixes and covers of songs. Started uploading them to Instagram. They started to do well. People started to like them. So that kind of motivated me. Okay, let me just keep doing this and see what comes of it, right? So I did that for a while and then started to release my own music. And once I did that, it kind of just snowball effect, and I kept, you know, learning more. But I did have a little bit of a background in the music in general, because I'm a classically trained violinist, played the violin for 12 years. So that's kind of like, I think, where I got a lot of my like pitch and like just knowing what sounds right and just that kind of musical inclination. But other than that, never thought I could sing, kind of just figured out that I could sing after trying it. But I think a lot of people would be surprised what they can do if they just, you know, try it. So.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, singing is hard, but it really depends what kind of music you're doing also.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big difference between being like an Ed Sheeran singer and then a I'm trying to think of another example. I mean, I was going to say T-Pain, but like he's actually a phenomenal singer, even though
he's an amazing singer.
The auto-tune, but you have a really good voice, so it's kind of surprising you've been doing it for only 3 years.
I really think that anybody, like I think 100% of people can become a decent singer. And I think that, like, you know, talent that some people are born with, they can take into like average, decent to like really good. But I think with some training and just like learning pitch and just trying to like practice your vocal exercises, whatever you might do, I think anybody can become a decent singer given the time. Yeah. It's just how much time you want to put into it.
So when did you start, like when you first started releasing music, what was your first attempt into trying to get people to listen to it?
In the beginning, it was just tell my friends, tell my family. I didn't really know what I was doing, right? So I just, in the beginning, I literally didn't know what equipment to get. I didn't know, like, I didn't know what mixing and mastering was. I didn't know anything about, like, audio files or anything. So I was using, like, Audacity to record. I was recording in my iPhone. I was just doing, like, whatever, like, I knew at the time, right?
Yeah.
So I was recording in one take the whole song. Didn't even know I could, like, break it up in a take. So I would just record the whole, like, song in one take. And then just take the best one, then I would upload it. No mixing, mastering, because I didn't know what that was. So after the first couple of releases and learning that, okay, people actually have a production element to this, like they put effort into this side, then I started to learn more about that and then team up with like a producer to like teach me a little bit about that. Then I upgraded my mic to get like a snowball mic, a little bit better. And then after a couple of releases, then I really started to get like serious about it. And actually one of my good friends in I should mention that I'm actually a student in Steven Institute in New York. Technically New Jersey, I just say New York because it's easier for people to understand. But so I go to school out here, I'm graduating this year. But I have a friend out here that I met about 2.5 years ago that she's mixing, mastering, amazing production, so gifted, so talented. And her name is Natalie Shamoon. She's also an artist. She goes by the artist name Natalie. She's from New York. So she owns a studio out here. So I record there and I mix, master, and get my production done there. So that's what I've been doing for like, I would say a solid like year, year and a half, which is the music that I'm most proud of now and is doing the best. So yeah.
And so you started off trying to get friends and family to hear it. When did you
Yeah.
transition to like trying to get strangers to hear it? Like,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
what were the things you tried, and
Yeah.
what were the things that failed, and what were the things that worked well?
One of the very first things that I tried was actually just searching up like how do I promote my music, right? And you were one of the first people that actually came up. So
Sick.
in the beginning I was watching, I vividly remember like taking like once I found your videos, it was like a whole weekend of like binging every single video you had put out to that point. Like literally every single video. So I watched every single video and then I came across your course. Took your course and on Facebook ads, right? So at that point, I didn't know you could even like market on Facebook ads. Like, I was probably 18 years old at the time. I'm 21 now, but so that was like 3 years ago. But so I went through your course on Facebook ads, taught myself how to do a little bit of that, and tried to run a couple. Utterly failed. Like everything was horrible. I didn't know why these things weren't working. But once I eventually had my first campaign that was giving like decent results, I was like, oh my goodness, this is like the holy grail. I could do this. Like I made it. Because I thought like if I could get that first initial one, like it's gonna happen, right? Obviously there's more you have to do, but at that time that was like something that I did and actually worked for people to like come and hear my music, which was like a big win at the time because at that point it was just people that knew me were listening to my music, but now it's like people that didn't know me are having a chance to listen to my music, which was that's really how you get yourself out there, right? So I was doing Facebook ads for that. And then I kind of had the idea of, okay, I think people are listening to a song when they get recommended it, in their ads. But I think what would make it more inclined for them to click on would be if they had an ad for a playlist. So people make playlists for whatever their activities are, right? They have playlists for moods, genres, act, like running, walking, driving, whatever their mood or like time of day is. So I was thinking if there's a playlist that's already made for somebody's taste, right? Their preferences, and you just sprinkle your songs within that playlist and you advertise that playlist on Facebook ads, you'll have a lot of success and a better like conversion rate of people actually going and clicking and listening to that playlist than just that single. Because truth be told, like no matter how good your song is, if they don't know that name of the artist, most times they're not gonna be as willing to click on it and listen to it as they are if it's a playlist that's already made for them, curated for their interests, right? So let's say I make like I say like singer songwriter music with like R&B vocals, kind of like that's kind of the
I would call it sexy atmospheric R&B.
vibe that I have. I guess you could call it that, yeah. But so that's kind of the music that I make. So I made a lot of like R&B playlists in the beginning. So what I would do is I would make those R&B playlists and just sprinkle a couple of my songs in between, and advertise and run ads for Facebook ads through that to those playlists. And I had a lot of success there because I saw a lot of people were listening to them, and save rates weren't that high, follow rates weren't that high. But at that point, it was just let me just try to get my song out there, have people listen to it, right? That was kind of the train of thought that I had, and I wasn't really worried about the engagement at that time because I didn't even know what engagement really would do long term. But yeah, I saw some success there, so I just kept doing that a little bit more at scale. So I just made a couple more playlists, kept running ads for those playlists, and that's kind of my first like attempt at like trying to get myself out there.
And you're right about the engagement on when you promote a playlist. Like, you get a lot of playlist followers, which is cool, but you
Yeah.
get like no saves and no playlist ads and no followers. So it's a trade-off. Like, and specifically the
Yeah.
types of playlists you're talking about. they're curated playlists. Like, for example, I think the one in your Spotify profile is called like Night Drive or something like that.
Night Vibes, yeah.
Night Vibes, yeah. And then I think there's some other ones on there as well. But like that one,
yeah.
The Night Vibes is mostly not your music. it's like every, I think your song in there is like song number 3, and then maybe you have one that's like 5 or 10 songs down the line. So it's not the same thing as promoting the other playlist you have in your Spotify pinned, which is the like Chaitha Collection.
Collection. Yeah.
Because a lot of artists, I think promoting the playlists has one big advantage in that you're right. It's like totally cheaper in general on Facebook ads.
Yeah.
Because you can just target like, if you make a playlist that's like hip hop vibes for nighttime or something. Like you could, or hip hop workout or something. You can target people who work out, who work out, weightlift, go for jogging, go for runs, etc. But who also like hip hop, and it's like a perfectly curated thing for their life, and it usually gets really low. But a lot of artists are like, I don't want to promote other artists' music, right? Because when you do that, you're effectively like promoting Drake or The Weeknd. Or so when you're pushing people to that playlist, which has other artists on it. When I was talking to Jason from Submit Hub, one thing that he kind of pushes with Submit Hub is that if you're on like a laser focused targeting playlist, like for example, a Night Vibes R&B playlist, and your song gets added to that, and before, like if you sound just like The Weeknd, and in that playlist, The Weeknd's right before you, and like whoever else sounds like The Weeknd is right after, and that's gonna like help Spotify figure out who likes your music, assuming people are actually like listening to your song, not skipping it and all that. So I think that's one thing. And someone else asked me about it recently. They're like, my fans also like sucks.
Yeah.
It's like horribly
wrong. I was going to bring that up as well. Cause I feel like the two main things that are like big milestones for artists, at least for me, when I first started and for a lot of people who first started, it's like, try to get a fans also like section just to have one, right? Because in the beginning you don't have one. And then once you have that, it's like, okay, get a radio. Because in the beginning you don't even have a radio. I don't know if they still have that on Spotify, but if you're a new artist, you don't have a radio.
Yeah.
So at the beginning it was like, let me just try to use these playlists, like give Spotify some data to see like, okay, these songs are similar. And let me just have a fans also like, right? So in the beginning, my fans also like was actually quite like, much like a lot of people's fans also like the first time it's not accurate, it's kind of just like everywhere and not like specific to your genre, but mine was pretty good because I had done a lot of like playlists at that time that were like very specific to my music, and it kind of matched me well with like artists that were similar. And then my radio came along too, so I feel like those two big milestones that are like give a lot of people confidence to keep going is I think what playlisting can do really well is just associate you with other artists that are similar to give you those like, because once you get into radio, radio is going to be a big push of your streaming, right? So once you get into radio, that's kind of like a good first step into like integrating yourself into the algorithm.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think is a good balance for artists in terms of running ads in their music versus other things? I mean, it sounds like when you started, it was pretty much just running ads, but There's also the whole playlisting thing, right? And in the past, I was like super anti people like hiring third party playlisters, especially ones who like would do it one off payments and stuff. Like, I mean, because it's, you know, it's a huge gray area in Spotify, and we won't go into like the depths of that because like we could probably talk about it for an hour. But over time, I've kind of gotten a little more. As long as the playlists are legit, which that's kind of the hardest part of the playlisting, is finding someone who's not a scammer, finding someone who has like a legit playlist. As long as the playlist is like legit, then my recommendation for a lot of people is like, if you're going to do playlisting, don't let it end up be more than like 10% or 15% of your total monthly streams. So I don't know. I don't know if you have any kind of general thoughts on playlisting and ads and kind of how you would mix them.
Yeah. So I always think about it this way. So what playlisting does really well is give you social proof, right? Because at the end of the day, like playlisting will not break your career and make you a super successful artist. Playlisting will not give you the most engaged fan base. What what it will do is give you that social proof of like, okay, I mean, as long as it's organic streams, right? Because using botted streams to do this, like, that's not going to do the same thing. And it's, I don't know if you're doing it that way, although some people do, but regardless, I think the good way to do it is do organic playlisting and have that be like the social proof in the beginning. Because when an artist has, let's say, 500, 600 monthly listeners and maybe a couple thousand monthly listeners, like a lot of people are just going to pass on the fact that, like, even like giving them a chance to listen because they're like, okay, this artist is probably not the greatest. And they might be amazing, but it's just that first like impression is just clouded just based off that lack of social proof, right? So if you have a little bit of playlisting just to get yourself over the hump, I feel like a lot of people give you that first chance to even give you that 30-second listen to even give you a chance. So I think that gave me a lot of that gave me a lot of opportunity in the beginning to like have people listen to me when I had a little bit of playlisting, just to have some social proof. So I think after you get that, then you should use playlisting as like fuel to the fire, right? So I've seen that like running ads for Facebook directly to the song or the album does wonders for like giving like Spotify good data for their algorithm. And then once you just run those ads for a bit, you'll see like the songs start to spike on Discover Weekly, Release Radar. And then once you see those spikes, then I generally tend to recommend like anywhere from like 10 to 20% of the streams should be coming from playlisting at that point. So you add in playlisting slowly once you see those spikes. Once you see that spike, you should add like playlisting 10% of what your streams are, 20%, maybe 30%. It's kind of arbitrary, but add that in slowly, and then once it spikes again, add in more, and then once it spikes, add in more, and then you'll start to see this like compounding effect, which it doesn't work with every release, but when a song is like very good quality, when you do it the right way, more often than not, like this strategy like has some success. So.
How should artists find not fake playlists? Because
Okay, yeah,
I've
so
talked about a
yeah.
few on this channel. Well, I've talked about one at least as of filming this that I've reviewed, and there'll be another one coming in within a month, and there'll be another one coming a month after that.
Yeah.
How do you like to kind of vet these curators when you're finding them?
Yeah, so Chartmetric is your best friend when you're looking at the stuff. It's a site. They have a paid version, but the free version should give you all that you need to like check this out. So a lot of times when I'm looking at a playlist, very obviously the first sign that it's fake would be if you ever see like a large spike or a large like dip in like their follower count, like in one day. More often than not, that's a sign. These days, it's a little bit harder to like use that exclusively just to see it because sometimes if a playlist is being like marketed through like TikTok, you will see a huge spike in one day because sometimes TikTok will blow up and then you'll have a bunch of traffic there.
I guess
But
also, if they're growing it with bots, they could just make the bots happen a little bit every day, right?
yeah. Some there's so much out there now that people are getting smart too. Like before, like radio was like the sacred thing where like if you're getting radio streams, the song is doing organically well. There's even bots now. I don't know how they do this, but I do know that it's out there. That there are bots now where they can like enhance the amount of streams you get just from radio now. So a song will do like 50 streams daily, but then have like 1,000 streams from like radio, which shouldn't make sense. But
I guess
somehow people do this.
if so, like if a bot goes and listens to Chaitha's artist radio, I would think those streams
Yeah.
come up as radio. So maybe that's all they're doing. They're just,
Maybe
yeah.
I don't know why that works because I know that like Spotify has certain things where if you like let a song repeat on like mute or something over a certain amount of times, it won't count those streams because they think it's fraudulent or whatever. So I don't think that should work, but maybe it does. But yeah.
I saw this video on Brandman Sean's channel. I don't know if you've ever seen his stuff. And I almost left like a very angry comment because I disagreed with it so much. It was like
What do you say?
it was he had this guest on who like I forgot what his name, but he essentially was just buying like hundreds of thousands or millions of bots to like blow up his Spotify and YouTube, like millions of YouTube views, millions of streams. I think the number they said in the video is he was making $70,000 a month from Spotify from bots. And
That's crazy.
then it turned out that he was stealing all the money to pay for the bots from like his employer, like his company's credit card. And so like eventually Spotify and all the streaming services blocked him everywhere. And then he got like arrested and was in jail for the past 2 years, but he got out. And then Brandman Sean had him on and they were talking about the bots thing, which I was cool. You know, I like to hear about that stuff, which is why I watched it. But like, they were kind of like agreeing with him about it being like a good strategy. And I was like, you guys are stupid. Like this. Yeah. And a lot of the comments were like, oh yeah, all these big artists are just using bots. And so therefore a smaller artist got to use bots too. And it was like, it's not really the same if like, I don't know, Drake or something adds like 1 million bots, like he gets like 1 billion streams a month. It's like, for him, it's this tiny thing, but for a small artist, it's like all of their numbers. Yeah, that's my rant for this session, I guess.
Yeah. I always tell people that like any fraudulent like botted like inorganic streams like might give you like that instant gratification or like ego like boost that you want to have, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, that's gonna do like next to nothing. And most likely negatively impact your algorithm and long-term growth. So if you're really serious about like having a music career and taking this seriously, building an audience that actually engages with you for your music and not just the numbers and like all of that kind of stuff, and connects with you as an artist on a deeper level, then that's not going to do you any good. That's not going to really like benefit you long-term. So yeah. I don't think that's a smart move, but yeah.
Yeah. So when looking at your Spotify profile, your Night Fives playlist has like 85,000 followers, which is like bonkers. I think that you have more followers in that one playlist than I do in my whole Spotify, like for all of
I don't think playlists. It has 85, I think it has like 65 if I'm not mistaken, but yeah, it has a lot. Yeah,
I'll pull it up right now. Yes, you're right, 64,000.
Yeah at this point like I've ran so many Facebook ads for playlists and just contacted so many curators. Like I have like a network of like probably over like 50, 60 playlists.
Yeah.
Just in all different types of genres, mostly in R&B though.
Right.
So combined playlist followers probably have surpassed somewhere over 1 million. But the playlist followers isn't that important, to be honest. Like followers is just a metric that they show on Spotify. But the more important thing is like how active are these playlists and like how engaged are them, right? And how much are they listening passively? Are they listening like actively? Right. So those are the kind of things that like are more important.
So when it comes to these playlists, once you start pumping ads into them, have you seen any of yours take off organically?
Yeah. So that's the switch. That's like the big switch you always want to make. Right. So you can't run ads forever because I mean, I guess you could, but like it's more of like a thing of like if you want to use the ad to like get that first initial boost of the playlist, like get over, I don't know, the follower count doesn't really matter, but like launch yourself in the algorithm as high as you can. And then once you like get into like that probably like top 10 to 20 like search terms of for that whatever playlist like genre or like search word that you're trying to like advertise to, then at that point, like hopefully, right, you're going to have a playlist that starts to do well organically and just show up from people searching it up and not just the ads.
Yeah.
And at that point, those two things combined can have a really powerful effect. So I've had a lot of playlists that like I ran ads for before, and then they would appear like in a couple like top searches. And then over time, they became like the top three, top two. I have some that are like the number one most searched playlist for a certain keyword. So now they get amazing organic traction, and I've completely turned the ads off, and I'm not spending any money on running ads for those, and they just organically just daily get people to those playlists because now they've been fed so much good data for so much time that they stay at that like that place.
Yeah, have you found anything aside from the name and the description of the playlist? It's like, for example, I'm just using Night Five as an example because it's like literally pinned on your profile. You know, it's Fives, and then it's got this like little star nighttime thing. I don't know what you call emoji. But then it's Givian, Daniel, Caesar, SZA, Drake, right? You just like list off a bunch of artists, which I'm guessing is like an SEO thing.
Yep. Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, SEO is search engine optimization. Do you make any other Like, are there any other things on Chartmetric or factors of the playlist that you pay attention to try to, like, have that organic portion of a playlist life do better?
Yeah. So a couple other things that I always look for is, if you have a playlist that, normally a playlist that does well organically is one that has a higher, like, average score. So on Spotify, every song is assigned a score from 0 to 100. So when if a song first comes out, it's a 0. And I don't know if any song is actually ever going to reach 100, but like some of the most popular songs of all time, yeah, like by Drake, are like 96, 97.
I think I saw someone posted on Twitter or something that, like, they looked up some song and it was 100. I forget what it was.
No, yeah, maybe. That's like, that has to be like the only one, because that never happens. But
yeah,
mostly, like, a good rating for a song, honestly, is like a 30, 40. Like, even a 20 is not bad. Like, like a lot of times the popularity score, like getting those, like 20, 30, 40, that's really good. Anything over 40 is amazing. So if you have the average score of a playlist like over 40, that's really good. And you can see this on Chartmetric. If you search up a playlist, like, it'll tell you, like, out of 100, like, what's the average score of all the songs in that playlist. And if you just try to get that up as high as you can, a lot of times that's, like, something that I've seen, like, helps. I don't know if it's, like, directly correlated, but I assume that it does contribute a little bit to that.
Yeah, it's really hard finding data about how Spotify ranks anything online. Like, I saw one guy who did, like, a 5-minute test where he changed the titles and thumbnails and then, like, searched the API to see where it ranked. And, like, he did see it change, but it was unpredictable because he checked again a week later and it was all different. and I did try a test where, like, I had these playlists that I had stopped ads on for quite a while, and they were, like, kind of slowly just draining followers. So they weren't growing anymore. So that means they didn't take off organically. So I went in the playlist and, first what I did is I copied all the songs, deleted all the songs, and pasted them back in so that they would show as being, like, all brand new. And then I went in and I, like, removed 10% of the songs and replaced them with 10% new songs. And then, like, I looked a week later and I did actually see a very small increase, but which is good because for, like, 2 months it was declining. So I think last time I talked to you, you said you've noticed that that doesn't matter at all. But
what doesn't matter?
Like updating the playlists.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I've seen some playlists that, like, literally haven't been updated since, like, 2015. Like, at all, like 0%, 28-day ad, and they're number one searched for some of these, like, but a lot of those are like a list that are, like, I don't know, Billy Bossa Nova top hits or something like that. Like, a lot of these, like, just, like, top hits or, like, best songs or whatever, those kind of playlists. But I don't think that has something to do with it. It might, but, like, I think more importantly is, like, the trying to ping as many keywords as you can in the description, in the title. Having a higher, like, average score for the playlist. I think those two things are probably the most helpful.
Cool. So on the ad strategies, how do you like to run ads on Facebook? Like, are you using traffic, using conversion? Are you still mostly prioritizing playlists? Are you prioritizing conversions or prioritizing direct to song? What types of ads do you use? I guess just kind of give us the down low.
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about this, but as you're the guru on this, so you're probably much better. But I've been doing it for some time, and I think for playlists at least, I think the ads that I've been doing the most, that been doing the best. I did, like, a pixel tracker, and I did it that way for conversions for a while. But once Facebook, like, changed its, like policies with Meta and all that, like, that became a little bit, it wasn't as effective, I saw, for playlists at least. So I stopped doing that, just ran traffic ads, and that's been doing really well. And a lot of times what I'll do for the creator is I'll have, like, when you first make a playlist, you have, like, the top four songs in the playlist. They make a cover out of that, right? So they just have the album covers of those top four. So to incentivize people to click on the ads, I'll have the top four songs be, like, very noticeable cover arts of songs that, for that genre at least, everybody knows. So, like, a Drake cover art, a Weeknd cover art, a Bryson Tiller cover art, a SZA cover art. And everybody that listens to that type of music is going to know those cover arts. So they're most likely to click on them. And so I have that as the creative. And then, so that's what I've been using.
So it's literally just a picture. It's not even, like, music on it.
No music. Because I mean, if they see that picture, they know the kind of music that's going to be on that playlist, right? So
That's
sometimes I'll
true.
have a little bit of text or whatever, but the big portion of the ad is usually just that. And that's been working really well. And I've done this for like a couple different genres now, but at least for like R&B, hip hop, it works best.
Damn. I don't think anyone would expect that that would work using just like the basic ass Spotify, like default cover art, and then just throwing that as a picture with no music. I mean, most of the playlist ads I've done, they're like subtly animated. They have animated videos that show the custom artwork that I had done for the playlist. Usually nowadays, the custom artwork is just made in Midjourney AI, but it'll have like
Majority's in.
pretty cool artwork, and then it's like an animated video with music, and it's like super specific. I'm gonna have to try launching a playlist ad that's just the basic picture. I guess it might not work for like the most recent one I did was Cyberpunk Synthwave, so none of the music in there would be recognizable by picture. So
I think there's some genres where like the cover art is not a big focus, right? But there's other genres where like cover art is very noticeable, and like that's like a culture statement. It's like a like people know this, so that's like very noticeable and recognizable. So I think it works for some, probably wouldn't work for all.
Yeah, I don't think it would work for metal or like anything that's less mainstream. Like I think hip hop, pop, R&B. I don't even know if it would work that well for EDM, actually. Just 'cause like I think it works so well for your stuff because everyone knows what The Weeknd looks like, you know? And so when even if they don't know the cover art, I think he's on his own cover arts, so they would recognize him. Or Drake. Everyone knows what Drake likes. I don't think I couldn't name a single Drake song, but I know what he looks like because of that meme.
That's crazy. You really couldn't name one Drake song.
No.
That's interesting. I mean, that the thing is, if for someone to be like hyper ultra successful, you only need like, I don't know, 1 to 2% of like the whole world population. Because the world is, I don't know, 7, 8 billion people. If you have 1 to 2%, that's crazy. So you don't really need like everybody to know you, but it feels sometimes when you're in a bubble, especially in like the US, right? It's like everybody knows them, but
I mean, I felt the same. I felt like such an old man when someone was like talking about targeting SZA in an ad campaign, and I was like, "What the fuck is SZA?" And they're like,
That's
"You've never
crazy.
heard of her?" And I was like, "No." And they type it out SZA, and I was like, "Oh, I've seen. I thought it was pronounced SZA." And they're like, "No,
Oh,
it's
okay.
SZA." And then like I went to look at her Spotify, and I was like, "I don't know a single one of these songs. Never, like, at all." But I don't listen to hip hop or R&B really. Like, I mean, the closest I get to hip hop is like Linkin Park, you know? So, and the closest I get to R&B is like The Weeknd, but he's more like, he's not really like just R&B, he's like pop. But yeah, it's funny. And like, similarly, like a lot of people that don't listen to hip hop probably couldn't name any EDM artists or metal artists or rock artists.
I couldn't name you one medalist, probably.
So yeah, and I think that came up in my SubmitHub thing, talking with Jason from SubmitHub. He was giving a Lady Gaga example. He's like, you know, if you walk into a room of 100 people, a lot of them there couldn't name a single Lady Gaga song or what she sounds like. But it doesn't matter because like the small percentage that can, it's like ends up being millions and millions and millions of people that make her like one of the most successful artists of all time. So,
And one more thing that I want to do want to touch on, because I feel like a lot of people don't know about this. It's such a like a small little like technicality that like will really help you out when you run ads, or in any sense sharing your music. When you run an ad to like a song, right? Always use the actual track link and don't use the album level link, because if you use the track link, when people click on it will automatically play the song. If you use the album level link, then it'll like take you to the page, but then you have to manually actually press play on the song to have it play. And just that little subtle difference gives people less choices and gives you like one foot in the door. So like I always say, give people like less choices, make it as streamlined as you can, try to get them in the door, and that's all you can really do. If they like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. But at least give yourself the best opportunity to like have that chance. So
Yeah, that's a good point. Did you know you can do a similar thing with playlists? You can make a
what do you mean?
You can make a link. So like, let's say you have your song in your Night Vibes playlist, and yeah. I'll just use a specific song just because. Let's say you're trying to. Oh, hold on, I don't have it open anymore. Night Vibes. You're trying to promote "There She Goes," which is song number 3 on Night Vibes. You can make it's, and I can show you how to do this later. But you can get a link to. It'll be like the normal "There She Goes" link, but at the end of it, there'll be like context equals, and then it'll have the playlist ID. And what it'll do is it'll open up "There She Goes" inside of Night Vibes and start automatically playing it when they click the link. And
I did not know you could do that.
It only works on cell phones. Doesn't work on desktop.
Mm-hmm.
On desktop, it just sends you to the song. But I've been thinking about doing that for my songs. I still send people straight to the song because I want those saves. But when promoting my playlists, I think I might start doing that because I've noticed like sometimes when you're promoting a playlist, you get like more followers sometimes than you will streams. So it's people will like follow the playlist, but then like not listen, which is.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people will like follow the playlist, like have the intention of like listening at a later date or like save it to their library so they can come back to it. But then a lot of times they'll just like forget about it or they just won't come back and listen. But that's probably what happens a lot of times.
So I was thinking if I could like deep link directly to a specific song, and I did something different. You know how Spotify has those what are they called? They're like curated editorials.
Personalized
editorials. Yeah, they give you that special link. One ad client of mine, their song got added to 2 editorials like in the first week, like 2 pretty big ones, and so they were like from day one, when as soon as they get added, they were like, let's launch a Facebook conversion campaign for each of these playlists with that link, because like we were all thinking Spotify is totally tracking this, and so we're hoping if we can show that we can drive a ton of traffic to this link, maybe they'll keep it on longer. Who knows if it helped or not? Like, there's no way to ever know.
Yeah.
it was on there for a month. Honestly, the song might still be on there, but it might have done that anyways. Someone else had a similar situation for a non-personalized editorial where they wanted to run ads to it, but they didn't have a custom link, so they used a deep link to the specific song in that editorial, and it works. Mm-hmm. Unless the song gets kicked off the playlist, then it stops working.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I never knew you could do it that way, but that's another small little thing that can help too.
Yeah, yeah. So you use Chartmetric. Do you pay the 140 buckaroos a month for it?
I do, because like there's a lot of like additional data that can help me with like all the playlists that like I try to run and curate now. So like it's helpful, but like if you're just trying to like start out and just get the data to see if a playlist is fake, if it's not organic or whatever, and just to like try to optimize like any playlist you're trying to build to like be the best performing one, but like trying to have the highest score or whatever. I don't think it's important to pay for it. That's a crazy price to pay just for that. So
yeah,
I think the free version, they give you so much in the free version. Like you don't need to pay for it.
Yeah. I mean, they have an artist version too for I think 10 bucks a month.
Yeah. That one, I think that one's worth it. That gives you some data that's like pretty useful.
Yeah. I mean, there's also artist.tools. I don't know if you've seen that one, but it's like $15 a month. And it's not as good as Chartmetric just because Chartmetric's been around for so long. But artist.tools, it's like if you're just looking to look at followers over time and like see if a playlist is botted and find contact information, it's it's perfect. You know, it's like 10 times cheaper.
So, song stats is another one that's great just if you're an artist to like have some general data, because it'll like notify you every time you get like charted on Apple Music. They'll notify you every time you get added to a new Spotify playlist. They'll like track the amount of like growth that you get for playlist followers and like the songs have been added to, how many listeners you're getting per month, that kind of like little stuff like that. That I don't think like a lot of these other sites have that. Like they don't like give you every playlist you've been added to, right? So it kind of sends you a message every time you have that. So SongStats, an app you can get on your phone, it's pretty useful.
Oh, it's a mobile app.
yeah.
Sick. So, have you done anything else music marketing wise? Because I before this, I Googled you to see if I could find like PR blogs, blog write-ups, mm-hmm. Or YouTube channel or anything. It seems like for the most part, you're like, you're a Spotify artist. And I don't mean that in a bad way or anything, but it seems like, seems like you've kind of built everything up this far with literally just ads and playlists.
Yeah, it's done wonders for me. Like it's worked really well. I feel like a lot of people do it in the beginning, just like, and they see some success and they just like, okay, that it works now. Yeah. But I think if you just like hammer down on that and just like really scale it, it can have like a really like profound compounding effect. So like, I think just continuing to like build it up as much as you can and not stopping once you see like that initial couple of like success is something that like really helps out. I have done a little bit of like PR stuff. Like I have had like some like blogs and some write-ups about me. So I probably have like 10 to 15 like articles out there like have been written about me as an artist, a couple of my songs, that kind of thing. You'll even see like if you search in my name, you'll see like a article about like when I swam for my college, not anymore. So when I was getting like recruited to come to the school to swim, I had like a swimming article or whatever. So that I think still pops up. But yeah, so there's a couple of things out there, but yeah.
That's cool, man. A lot of artists hate the social media grind. And so when they see that like there's a viable path to getting their music out there without having to like whore themselves out to like TikTok, they get really happy.
That's the other thing too. So I always like, I know the power of TikTok and I know that it's so successful. Like it's like a cheat code. It's like, if you can use TikTok to like successfully market your music, there's nothing more powerful, right? Yeah. For building an audience and just having having an audience. But I've always thought that any artist that ever has success on TikTok, for the most part, it's always nobody knows the artist's name. Nobody knows the song of the artist that blew up. They don't even know like the whole song. They just know one to two lines of that song and that's it. And then they hear that over and over and that becomes ultra successful, ultra popular. But it's like a spike. You go to like an extreme high and then after that, the artist can never like double down and actually like never surpass it. And a lot of times they can't capitalize on it either. So
who's that artist that did that Billie Eilish song? Here it is. Armani White.
Yeah,
I mean, it's Armani White, he's got 8 million monthly listeners, which, like, you know, Armani White, I don't know if you're ever going to see this video. I don't know you. But, you know, congratulations. That's awesome. But I feel like he's probably, like, I don't know. Maybe he was a successful artist before this. I have literally zero insight on him. But it's like, I would think he's going to have a very hard time ever surpassing that one TikTok clip that went viral. But...
yeah,
who knows? I mean,
he might, maybe he does too.
He might spin it off like Lil Nas X started off in a similar way, and he actually did a great job of not just being a one trick pony or a. I was trying to think of a funny joke with that because it's a cowboy song, one trick whatever.
There's something there.
There's some joke there you can make that he's not going to be a one trick cowboy, but you know, right now he has that one song at 251 million, and then he does have other songs like 19 million and 36 million, so. Maybe he is doing a good job of transitioning into being like not just a TikTok sensation. But I feel like a lot of people probably, when they blow up on TikTok, they get one song that pops and then they just like die as an artist, you know?
Yeah. And the other thing too is like, I don't know if this is for all people, but for at least for me, like my philosophy on like trying to grow as an artist and just generally in life and goal setting in general is like, I am perfectly content and very satisfied with like gradually building something up, right? So I appreciate the small wins and I just kind of like, I enjoy the process of creating and trying to acquire more success and more milestones. So I don't have a problem in like slowly building something up from the ground up instead of, you know, having that initial big spike and like having a bunch of success. I feel like that, at least for me, would ruin the point of it because it's kind of like, you feel more gratification if you take a long time to build something up to a certain point than if you get it immediately because you don't have the same respect for it and you kind of, in a sense, didn't really like earn it to the same degree, didn't put the same amount of hours and time into it. So I feel like for me, it's more gratifying if I've done something from scratch, but like by the decisions I've made, the choices I've like the kind of music that I put out over time, it kind of just like grows and grows and grows.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that's what's gratifying to me. So like when I first started, obviously I had 0 monthly listeners, and over time it's kind of just like increased, increased, increased. And it's never had like a huge spike. It had like a little spike, it'll go down a little bit, increase a little bit more, go down a little bit, and it kind of just consistently has been like increasing, which is great. Recently it hit like 300,000 monthly listeners, which is amazing, right? Which is funny because the same day I hit 300,000 monthly listeners, I also hit 8 million streams on Spotify. So
Yeah.
it's crazy how the universe works with the like combining the two. But yeah, that's it's been great.
Yeah, I know what you mean by the slow and steady thing. A lot of people on YouTube, for example, like there's a lot of YouTubers who like explode and then disappear, but the ones that like have kind of built slow and steady over the long time are the ones who ride out those, you know, ups and downs a lot more smoothly. And I think it's the same for music. If you have a slowly built career and built a fan base like one brick at a time, you're probably, you might never be like a huge worldwide sensation viral moment, but I feel like you'd have a lot more long-term stable career that way than if you blew up overnight. Because if you wanted 1 million monthly listeners, you could just go get a couple $1,000 and buy a bunch of playlists and get it like in 2 weeks, right? And but that like you, I don't think you would get that much satisfaction out of that, because it's like, oh cool, I spent $5,000, now I have monthly listeners, and a month later it's like, oh, back down to 300, you know. So yeah.
And I also think like it gives you the freedom to like make mistakes and not do things the proper way and have like mess ups, because if you're doing it with like a huge audience when you have blown up already, it's amplified. But if you're doing it in the beginning, you like make those mistakes at a point where like not many people are listening to you. So you can do it with less, I guess, criticism, less like backlash or like less judgment, right?
Yeah.
So I think if you do it in those early stages, it like allows you more freedom, right? So I always say I'm delusionally optimistic. So I'll always do the best that like I do. I mean, I'll always do the best that I can and just always hope for the best in any situation. So whether it does succeed or it doesn't, I'll
Yeah.
always go into it with the mindset of like, okay, this is gonna work out, everything's gonna be great. And I feel like having that mindset just gives you the opportunity to like put yourself out there as much as you can, because at the end of the day, that's all you really can do. And if the goal is to like make a career out of music, you really have to do it that way.
Yeah.
Like having the like, okay, I hope I blow up, I hope like somebody like finds me and just like amplifies my career like 100x and I get signed to a label, like the chances of that are so minuscule that like you're kind of just like wishing you won the lottery, right? So
Pretty much.
if you want to take it into your own hands and you want to like do it by yourself, I think just putting yourself out there in the most opportunities you can and trying to learn everything by yourself, right? So I think a lot of people like try to allocate certain things to somebody else. So they'll be like, oh, I don't want to learn how to run Facebook ads because it's too complicated. I'll just have somebody else do it, right? Which is fine
Yeah.
if you want to do it that way, but I think having like at least like a basic understanding of how to run them and how they do work
Yeah.
can provide a lot of like, information for you to like do in the future.
Yeah. And I mean, as someone who owns an ad agency, who runs ads for people, I tell people all the time, like, it'd be a lot better if they could do it themselves. You know, I mean, like, and even at the expense, like it business wise, I should probably telling everyone, no, you could never do it yourself. Hire me. But like long term for an artist, it makes a lot more sense when they learn the skills. Like they might, you know, they might fail a bunch. They might spend the first 6 months wasting money. But like if they can figure out that formula and get the system down, they'll have this lifelong skill. And it's not for everyone, but I think even if they're gonna eventually outsource it, it'd be good for them to like know how the process works, so they're not reliant on outsourcing it, and also they know how to vet like the quality of what they're getting when they do outsource it. Kind of like if you were going to outsource your production, which you do, but like if you do it yourself, you're only going to outsource it to someone who's really freaking good, because you know how good you can do it yourself. And one of a friend of mine who mixes and masters my Ever Waking Moment metal stuff. He's been doing it for most of the releases because I don't have time. But like I've been doing metal production for like, I don't know, 15, 17 years or something, and I feel like I'm pretty damn good at it. But like, I know how much better and faster he is. And he was talking to me about how he didn't have time for like some release, and he got a quote for someone else to do his stuff. And like, he was like, it was like this pretty like legendary guy, but he was just like, it's just not worth the money. Like, I can do this. This is my quality, and your quality is like 5% better. Why am I going to pay $1,000 for 5% better?
You know, that's the exact situation. So I think I mentioned before that Natalie, an artist in New York, is the one that does like my mix and master. And she does an amazing job. Like, she's taught everything. She's self-taught. She taught her how to like do everything by herself over time. And she does a really good job. But then she, a lot of times, will feel like, oh, I need to pay this person $1,000 to make it, like, because they have this like insane credibility of like roster of artists. You know, right? But like, she gets that track back, and it's, I don't know, is it even better? Maybe it's 5% better. Maybe it's a little bit better. If even that, right? But a lot of times, I feel like for your own sound, a lot of people can do a better job themselves because they know what they want to hear. Because a lot of producers might do it correct, but what is really correct, right? It's really what sounds right for your tone, your sound, your genre, that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really good for artists to start off doing like as much as they can possibly bear themselves, and then kind of slowly, one by one, start outsourcing the things they hate the most or suck the most at, just so they have some kind of vision.
For me, at least, the most like the thing that I least liked was mixing and mastering. Yeah. So like, when I first started, like, I didn't even know it was a thing. So at that point, I like sat down on Zoom calls, like, learn how to like I would just watch the guy do it in front of me on Zoom, share a screen, and I would just watch him do it, right? So over a time, like, I knew what certain things did, and just having that basic understanding, now it's like, okay, at least I have that. So now I can have somebody else do my mixing and mastering, but I know what I like, I know what I want. So at that point, it becomes easier to like communicate things. So
that is a big, it is a big problem, the communication. So a lot of artists, if you know nothing about it, it's a lot harder to kind of, you know, work with anyone. But if you know a little bit, you can at least be a little bit useful.
Especially
mixing and mastering. Like, I feel like, just because of someone who's done mixing and mastering for so long, his own stuff, like, I couldn't imagine being able to write a song without knowing how to do production. Except, like, in your music, too, it's, like, very unique. So it's honestly, if you told me that you did it yourself, I'd be like, that makes sense. You know, it's like, I don't know how you would portray that idea to someone else, in terms of how things are done, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, the production is, at least like the most recent music that I put out, I very much do it like, I have like, it's like a guitar loop, or like, I don't like drums and percussion at the moment. Like, I think the kind of music I'm making now, it's more of like a emotion-based, like trying to create the melodies and like deal with like the vocals and the like the guitar loop or that kind of those kind of sounds. So it's very like simplistic production, as in a sense. Yeah. So production isn't crazy, like a bunch of instruments, it's kind of just like a few things that are like very like mood-based. And then the vocals kind of like take it to like complete the whole track. And then the mixing and mastering, like, a lot of times it's like what a lot of people would consider a demo of a track is what I actually like to like release as a track, right? Like, I don't overproduce, I don't over mix and master. It's kind of, I try to create the emotion and I try to tell a story, and that's the music that I like to make, and that's the music that my fans like to listen to. So yeah.
And you know what we call that genre of music that you make?
What?
Do you remember it from?
Oh, what did you said it was sexy atmospheric something
sexy
like that.
Sexy atmospheric R&B music. You should
have. I guess I have like a I don't know what you would call it, like a slogan or not slogan. I don't know. In my Spotify artist, if you look, I say writing breakup notes as love letters. I'm sorry, writing love letters as breakup notes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the. Kind of like the theme throughout my music. I write music about my emotions and like relationships that I've had, and that the things associated with that. So that's kind of like the music that I make, and that's what my fans like to hear. So
yeah, man, Well, is there anything else you want to let everyone know before we call it a call?
I don't know of anything specific. If you have any questions, I'm here. But
no, I think we covered everything. It's been about an hour.
Yeah.
I think we got all the goods. Can you think of anything?
Nope. Okay. I think we're going to end this out. Do want to shout out. There is a guy that when I first started making music, right? Like I told you, I was never really into like making music. Yeah. I obviously was very musically inclined from playing the violin. But in the beginning, super talented person. One of my best friends now, I make music with him all the time. He's also from New York. His name is WMC. His artist name is WMC. You can find him on Spotify. He makes very similar music to me. A little bit more on like the hip hop side as well, but that's the kind of music he makes. Mm. He's kind of the guy in the beginning that kind of like guided me to like know, okay, this just observing him and just listening to him and just learning from him is what I got a lot of inspiration from. And so, yeah, just shout out to him.
Shout out to him. Did you say WMC?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, the cap, like, it's all capital, capital W, capital M, capital C.
Cool. Well, you've surpassed.
We always say that.
You've surpassed.
We always say that. No, it's never a competition with us. It's always like, we just try to make the best music, but.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.